Hi, I'm Anya.
And I'm Chickpea.
And you're listening to COP15 Indie Media Radio. And that was the sound of a glacier melting.
So during the days of action around the 2009 United Nations Climate Change Conference, which is mostly referred to as the COP15, a group of radio enthusiasts hailing from around the globe came together to produce daily radio shows in four different languages.
These shows focused on the climate and social justice issues, inspiring the multitude of protest activity that was taking place in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Over the next hour, you will hear a selection of audio that aired on the live English segment of Indie Media Radio at the COP15.
On the 12th of December 2009, during the Global Day of Action, around 100,000 people took to the streets of Copenhagen. The call to action was an attempt to pressure governments into taking the urgent and resolute action necessary to prevent catastrophic climate change, demanding that industrialized countries take more responsibility for climate change by radically reducing their emissions. The interview that you're about to hear is with Naomi Klein, who took part in the climate summit and the People's Climate Conference.
Kind of get lost in the context of a big UN gathering, so that's why I'm here.
And have you been? You've been speaking at events here over the past few days. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about how that's been?
Well, the whole conference has been, frankly, very, very interesting because, you know, the whole sort of ethos of the environmental movement, the reputation for a lot of people is sort of, let's all hold hands, kind of soft, green and fuzzy. And this conference has been angry. And this conference has really been about class. It's been about race. It has really brought together, even inside the Bella Center, people who, for whom climate change is not the future, for whom it's not a theory. They are watching their cultures disappear, and they are looking at a future of mass death. I mean, this is the truth of it. And so I think the whole environmental movement is being radically transformed. Its pole has moved to the south. And it really is a movement that sees climate change as a class war that's being waged by the rich against the poor. It's not theoretical. It's just what's happening. The actions of the rich are leading directly to mass impoverishment in the south, and we refuse to stop doing it. And that's what's interesting, you know, about what's going on at the Bella Center is, you know, usually the poles of this debate are kept so far apart. They don't have to come face to face. But, you know, in the Bella Center, you have these sort of moments where, you know, the people from Tuvalu will be having a protest saying, you know, if this 2-degree target means our death. And you have to watch, like, the European and the U.S. and the Canadian climate negotiators sort of look at their shoes and try not to meet their eye as they say that that is politically unfeasible. And it's really quite harrowing to see these worlds come together. But I think it's important that they do come together. But it's also important for people on the streets to say very clearly that we don't believe in the solutions that they're selling in there.
And you talk a bit about anger and rage. Why are these the kind of focus points or sort of burning issues for you or burning kind of concepts for you at the moment to do with this particular movement?
I think that the environmental movement has used a tactic for a very long time, which is sort of claiming that, trying to erase difference, right? Which is, we're all in this together. Unlike lots of other issues, this issue affects everybody. Even the rich businessmen have grandchildren that they have to worry about. This has been the discourse. And it's gotten us pretty much nowhere. It's all it's got created is a huge industry around green finance and investment, but not real solutions. And I think the rage, I don't know whether it's good or it's bad, but I think it's actually potentially much more effective as a counterforce than this kind of touchy-feely, we're all in it together discourse. Because we're not all in it together. I mean, eventually, yes, climate change affects everybody. But in the short term, it does not affect everybody equally. And we didn't all do this together. And that's what's so heartbreaking about these negotiations, is that the people who need real action on climate change have absolutely no power in the equation in terms of the negotiations. I mean, you think about a country like Tuvalu or the Maldives. These are almost zero emitters. So there's absolutely nothing that they can do to change their behavior in order to avoid their own national extinction. So they need to somehow convince the people who are doing the action to change their behavior. And that can't be done without massive counter pressure, because it's not a negotiation in the traditional sense of I'll give a bit and then you'll give a bit. You have one group of people who are fighting for their survival and another group of people who see this as a choice. And that's not a fair fight.
Yep. And so what would you ultimately like to see to come out of this time in Copenhagen?
Well, I think, to me, the reason why I'm here is that I think there are some ideas around that have the power to become really galvanizing new forms of counter-pressure and activism. First and foremost, the idea of ecological debt and the idea that climate change is a problem that was created in the rich world. The effects are being felt in the developing world. We have overconsumed our atmospheric space. And so when you come to a gathering like this, like the way it's reported on the news is as if poor countries are begging for help, right? The ecological debt argument, I think, is actually much, much more empowering for people, because it's saying actually that they're owed, which means that they should have control over the resources, as opposed to just accept whatever gets tossed their way. I don't think anything's going to come out of the official Bella Center, but I think what you see on the margins of this conference is the articulation of a new counter-movement that is what needs to replace what's happening in the Bella Center, which I think is indicting itself before the world. So that's why I came to Copenhagen, to participate in that and meet a lot of incredible people from around the world who have come here to tell their stories. So I've just been doing as many interviews of my own as I can.
Hi, I'm Anya.
And I'm Chickpea.
And you're listening to COP15 Indie Media Radio, featuring audio from the streets of Copenhagen, taken during the COP15 negotiations in Denmark.
On the 14th December, a No Borders demonstration met at Israel Platz and proceeded to march to the Danish Ministry of Defense, where around 1,500 protesters formed a solid block enclosed by people with arms linked. Speeches were given linking the issues of climate change and migration. Protest continued as a solid block, and demonstrators succeeded in untethering a very large orange balloon advertising the COP15 process. The police struggled to keep it tied down, but the orange balloon was eventually liberated. This next piece of audio features sounds and words from activists on the street during the snowboarders demonstration.
Summarize what the key issues of these demonstrations are and why people are on the street today.
Okay, there's somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 people on the street today. It's the No Borders Day of Action as part of the Copenhagen Climate Summit. Because what we've been hearing over the past week is a lot of people talking about, a lot of charities and NGOs talking about climate change, but not talking enough about climate justice, talking about the social impacts on the ground of people affected by climate change, by floods and by droughts. What we're seeing all over the world is hundreds of thousands of people being displaced by climate change. Climate change and militarization are the prime causes of displacement. And what we're seeing is the government, who are just putting up their borders and saying, okay, you know, we in the rich industrialized nations, we may have caused the problems, but we're not going to support you. We're not going to stand in solidarity with those who are already being affected now, not 50 years down the line, but people who are being forced from their home, forced migration out of their homes, out of their communities right now because of the rich industrialized nations' addiction to economic growth before putting the planet's sustainability and people first. So thankfully, people are out on the streets today saying no to closing of borders, freedom for movement for all, and a recognition of climate refugees within the United Nations narrative. There's still the 14 summits, and probably, you know, maybe this summit too, there's still going to be no recognition of the concept of climate refugees. So we're really trying to put it on the map, and we're connecting the issues between climate change, social justice and militarization.
What does climate justice mean to you?
Climate justice means to me that climate change isn't some abstract thing which is happening 50 years down the line, but impacts people on the ground now, and not just anyone, but specific demographics of society are being impacted. What we're seeing is white, wealthy nations who are causing most of the problems, and black communities in the global south, and poor and predominantly black communities in the global north who are bearing the impacts of climate change now. Climate change is an issue of civil liberties. It's no more now an issue of moral righteousness, and we should care about climate change because it's the right thing to do. But people are dying right now as we speak, not just because of floods and droughts, because people are pulling up their borders and not standing in solidarity and trying to understand the issue of people who are being forced to leave their homes because of our actions and because of the, you know, government's greenwash and continual addiction to economic growth. So it is such a social justice issue, climate change. It is an issue of civil liberties. And more than that, it's an issue of self-defense. We need to defend our communities from the impacts of climate change. And we need to stand up before it's too late, whilst we still have a chance, and break down the systems of perpetual economic growth of capitalism before the planet's sustainability.
Caused by immigration. Bullshit. Get off it. The enemy is profit. Higher taxes and inflation.
Dave, you're a trade unionist. In the issue of migration, we've always been confronted with this conflict in society about immigrants taking away jobs in the country where immigrants are going. What do you, as a trade unionist, think of that argument?
Well, I can only say from my own experience in Canada, I mean, the whole nation was built on immigrants coming to Canada. And what we see now, in fact, are migrants doing the worst work with the least working conditions. So any trade unionist that is in an act of solidarity with other workers, which is fundamental to any meaningful workers' movement, is to stand together with those people, not from a place of sympathy or compassion, but a place of solidarity, because if one person is down, we're all down. When do we hit the bottom? If there's always someone that's going to be paid less and be treated worse than somebody else, it's a very slippery slope and doesn't help any worker in the long run, no matter who they are.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
How do you feel about this demonstration today here?
Well, I'm really excited to see people taking the streets yet again, and we have to be conscious that each time we do it, it's just a step. We won't achieve nirvana in one day. This is a neoliberal way of thinking, that you just get what you want when you want it. But this has much more meaning, because of people taking risks, holding their head high, and people from all over the world doing this, and not just in Copenhagen today. And this tells me that no matter how they've tried to silence us, no matter how they've tried to make us feel like victims, no matter how much fear they instill in us and think that we're helpless, the opposite is true. And we see it every time we take the streets like this, that we have what it takes to keep fighting a system that really must be stopped.
Yesterday at the assembly, it was said that this is, although it's a no border demonstration, this will definitely have borders to prevent the police to enter, because we saw that in the last few days several times that the police rushed into the demonstration, tried to crush it, and that's why we really have to stick together.
Yeah, definitely. But the vibe is excellent here. Everyone's in really good spirits. So.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, besides the cold and everyone, it's freezing. But
yeah.
It's just we have to dance more.
Why are you here today, then?
Well, we came with the climate caravan, with people from all over, mostly southern countries.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the first ones who really get the impacts of climate change. And they are here for, showing directly what it means to people, actually. And it's kind of cynical that many people seem to care more about the polar bear than about humans who are really affected by these climate changes. And yeah, and of course, it's very strongly related, the issues of social justice, climate justice. From my point of view, there are movements coming together. For many, many years, we had a lot of single issue movements, and the whole world trade, so-called anti-globalization movement, which in my opinion is a movement of globalization, and the a movement of ecologists were separate things, and we see now these movements coming together and growing into something bigger, and that really like this I really like. And also with the refugee stuff, there had been at least in Germany there had been several attempts to bring together these so-called anti-globalization movements, at least its more radical parts, and the refugee movement, mm-hmm. or the no border, no one is illegal.
What do borders have to do with climate? Like, can you sort of state that argument for?
I mean, I give one concrete example. We've been with the caravan. There had been actually two buses, and in our bus we went through France, and we've been in Paris, and there are the movements of the sans-papier, they call it, the paperless people.
Yeah.
They have squatted a huge factory of, I don't know what it was, and they call it the Ministry for the Legalization of the Sans-Papier. And there we had an exchange between these people from the south and the refugees. And they said, while 20 years ago it was mostly people fleeing for poverty, for reason of poverty and war, now it's mostly, or a lot of them, are actually climate refugees. Because in areas where, yeah, up to 10 years ago, they could easily grow their own food. The areas are dry, nothing grows anymore, and they really see the impacts of climate change. Yeah. And that prevents them from living there.
Yeah.
And this will definitely carry on, and it will become worse and worse. And,
yeah.
So it's not just about this abstract thing of movements. I mean, it's not abstract in any way, but it's not a theoretical thing. These issues are really strongly related, as the questions of world trade and its impact,
yeah.
and the whole capitalism. And we see actually really a radicalization of movements. I mean, there were organizations such as Jubilee, which were few years ago very strongly just focused on debt release, talking now about ecological debt and about that there's a contradiction not only between the rich and poor countries, but also they are talking about capitalism right now. And there is no climate justice possible inside capitalism. And this is really, I mean...
So, yeah, it's a pretty radical message to
yes,
come from it.
Yes, definitely. And we saw that the more it becomes really obvious that the official negotiations are just there to prevent anything from really happens. The more even the NGO people realize that it doesn't make sense to ask the politicians to do something, but that it really has to come from below.
Cool. And could you just mention a little bit about the climate caravan and what it is?
The climate caravan was actually meant to bring people from the south to here, but also to combine the issues of world trade and climate justice. It started in Geneva at the WTO summit. In, well, now almost 3 weeks ago, or 2.5 weeks. Yeah, and already there we participated in the protest against the WTO summit. And then the caravan split up into two different routes. One went through Germany and went through France. And we met up with several groups. Many of the participants are in Via Campesina, for instance. It's a small farmers network worldwide, but also from other social movements. And they met up with, I went through the France route, and we met up with Sans-Papier, but also small farmers from Confédération Paysanne, which is the French network, or the French part of Via Campesina, and also other social movements. So it was meant to have a direct exchange between people in different countries.
Yeah.
And now we are here to bring the voices of the people.
Do you think that people have the right to live where they want to live?
Definitely. I mean, it's a cynical thing that we are actually allowed to. It's just a small part of the human community, actually, that is allowed to go wherever they want. And that, unfortunately, very much depends still on the color of the skin and on the money. So now it's possible also for black or colored people to go anywhere else if they have enough. But generally, it's more easier for people who have a European or generally Western passport. But of course, I mean, taking this seriously, it won't be possible. because of course people want to go where wealth already is and where there's fertile soil and whatever, but many people also would like to stay where they are. But as long as we carry on exploiting, or I mean, we are part of the problem as well as trying to be part of the solution. But as long as this destruction and exploitation carries on, it simply won't be possible.
This is Anya.
And I'm Chickpea, and you're listening to COP15 Indie Media Radio, featuring audio from the streets of Copenhagen taken during the COP15 negotiations in Denmark. That last track was Philistine Singularities.
This next short interview with a Danish police officer was conducted during a raid on Christiania during the night of the 14th of December 2009. Activists had been attending an evening party where Naomi Klein and others addressed a crowd as part of a Reclaim Power party and fundraising fundraiser when they were tear-gassed and arrested by police in an operation aimed at wearing down street-level opposition through constant offensive action. The following day, the legal team confirmed arrests at 196 people.
And we can't get in contact with them.
Trying to calm it down.
What happened? Like, are people okay?
We're just searching the area. Yes, people are okay.
Are searching the area for?
Yes, Molotov cocktails. Lots of them.
Really?
Really.
Okay, what happened? Like, because there's glass everywhere, and I don't know, I'm...
Glass?
Yeah.
It's the Molotov cocktails.
But so what happened?
That have been thrown.
At who?
The police.
Why were the police here in the first place before the Molotovs got thrown? Like, did the police were here and then the Molotovs got thrown?
We are patrolling all over the Copenhagen.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And then they throw the Molotov cocktails against us.
Okay. But the police were already here before the Molotov cocktails were thrown.
We are all over Copenhagen.
Yeah, no. I know. I'm just trying to clarify that the police were
outside,
here first.
Also outside Christiania.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And then what did the police do back from the Molotovs?
What do we do back? What do we mean?
Yeah, well, because people were saying there was gas and pepper spray and dogs, and we're just worried about our friends to know that they're okay.
They are okay.
Okay.
I assure you.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Welcome back to Indie Media Radio from the COP15. I'm Chickpea.
And I'm Anya.
So one of the blocks that took part in the Reclaim Power action was the Bike Block, a bicycle-powered group of about 200 people who gathered up abandoned bikes found on the streets of Copenhagen and fixed them up. The goal of the Bike Block was to help facilitate the movements of the blue and green blocks of the Reclaim Power action. This next piece will give a bit of a clearer picture of what the Bike Block was about.
I'm here with Issa from the Bike Block. Issa, can you tell us a little bit about the Bike Block?
So the Bike Block is a collaboration between the Laboratory of Insurrectionary Imagination and the Camp for Climate Action in the UK. The Laboratory of Insurrectionary Imagination is a collective of artists and activists that try to open spaces for artists to bring their creativity and imagination to activists who in return in a way bring their own engagement and audaciousness and courage. We feel that sometimes the world of art can be very, very creative, very attentive to detail and aesthetics, but lack political engagement, and the world of activists can be very courageous, very audacious, very engaged, but can lack a bit of creativity. So what we try to find is spaces or open spaces where these two constituencies somehow meet and skill share. Mm-hmm. And the Camp for Climate Action is a growing movement of activists that, in a nutshell, address the climate crisis by fighting against the root causes of climate change. So the aim of the Bike Block is to use old and discarded bicycles and recycle them into tools of civil disobedience for the Reclaim Power Day of Action, which will aim tomorrow to go into or as close as possible to the Bella Center and hold people's assemblies for climate justice. So where activists are going to go in and delegates will walk out to meet and, in a way, in my view, hold the conference that should take place rather than the tragic farce that is taking place at the moment. So with these recycled bicycles, we are going to do different things. The first one is called the Swarm, and this is going to be loads of small autonomous groups of people on bikes that are basically going to use the movability, flexibility, versatility of the bikes to be able to move quickly through the city around the Bella Center to hopefully open spaces for other people to get to the Bella Center. So we want to use these groups to either go through the fence or take the police away, siphon the police attention away. The main aim of the Bike Block is not to have bicycles within the Bella Center, it's to make sure that the people's assemblies take place. That's really our aim. So it's a support and facilitation purpose. We also have what we call double-double troubles, which are striking machines made of two tall bikes. So a tall bike is a bicycle made of two frames welded on top of each other with a chariot in between. So not only it's striking and it's fun to ride, but it's also logistically really useful because it's high, so you have good visibility. You can carry more people, you can carry hot food, you can carry hot drinks, you can carry compost toilet, whatever. And then we have the machine that is our secret plan to be unveiled tomorrow on the day of the action.
Mm-hmm. And how many people at this stage are taking part in the bike block? What kind of response has a bike block gotten from people that are here in Copenhagen?
It's a difficult question to answer because there are, in a way, loads of different level of engagement and commitment. So I think that the core crew that has been spending entire days here fixing bikes, building the machines, cooking, doing media, doing everything that needs to be done for the action, for the bike block to be a success, probably is around 60 to 70 people. And we've had, I think it's fair to say, hundreds of people coming through, fixing bikes, coming to the trainings. So it's been an amazing response. And I think that one of the reasons why it has captured people's imaginations is because it's quirky, it's witty, and it's audacious. It's what we wanted to do with the bike block was, first of all, to use local resources. It's that both the laboratory and the Camp for Climate Action are very inspired and informed by permaculture. And one of the main principles of permaculture is use local resources. And obviously, when you think of Copenhagen, one of the main local resources is bicycles. And I think that bicycle is a beautiful tool of the everyday. And in a way, it also tells a relevant story about alternatives to the sick market-based solutions that we are being proposed. So it's not to say that the bicycle is the answer to the climate crisis, but I think that it tells an interesting story because it's a very low-impact piece of technology, and it's an amazingly clever piece of technology. It probably is one of the most ergonomic and efficient machines ever designed. And it does... It's versatile, it's multifunctional, you can do so much more than bring one person from A to B with a bike. You can turn it into the machine you want, you can make electricity with it, you can make sound, you can produce food, you can make images. And I think that tool of the everyday that is so multifunctional, that is healthy and that has a low impact, kind of captured the imagination of what it is that we should be talking about when we talk about the climate crisis. And I think that it also tells a story of working very quickly and very intelligently and creatively on the street. And what we wanted to do was try to reinvent a little bit street protest, try to move away from forms that can turn a bit formulaic. So when you have big demos, you tend to have the legal march, the black block, the pink block. And we wanted to have something that... And it's not to say that these things are bad or boring. It's just we wanted to propose something that would be new and therefore more exciting. And I think that has worked, is that people feel that it can be efficient on the street as well as fun to use.
Mm-hmm. And also fun in the creative process, because there's lots of skills that people are learning while they're taking part in the bike block and the whole kind of process. Can you maybe talk a little bit about the sorts of skills that are being shared here in these days beforehand?
I think that for me, one of the things that has been the most inspiring with the bike block is that it's almost that I have opened the door to an entire world that I only suspected but didn't quite realize the beauty and the richness of it. And I think that's the passionate bike people and the DIY culture, because I think that the bike block has kind of opened the door to this world, to the world of people who just love doing things by themselves, fixing things, recycling. Is that you take three bikes and you make one, you take apart, you just undo things, redo it. you do it by yourself, but also not in a selfish way. You don't, it's DIY as non-consumerist rather than do it for yourself. And what has been absolutely amazing here has been the amount of skill sharing and collaboration going on in the courtyard in the freezing cold of Copenhagen. There are people literally shouting from the middle of the courtyard, does someone know how to straighten a wheel? And there'll always be three people walking and say, yeah, that's the way you do it. And I think that has spread not just around the bicycles, but also in the workshop where people have been skill sharing in welding and how to angle grind in a way that is efficient. It has gone all the way to the kitchen where people go and skip every day to be able to feed us every day. And it's just been such an amazing space for people to work together, collaborate, exchange their skills, and create something that is new. And it's, I mean, personally, this is there's nothing that I love more than being in those spaces where literally magic happens, because it's just people with a common purpose, but the most amazing diversity of skills that just come together with so much open mind and so much generosity and open heart, that really it has been magic. And in a way I feel that even if for whatever reason the bike block doesn't happen, you know, all the bikes are confiscated, we've already won. And so we've won something, and I think that what we've won is something that can't be taken away, because what we've shared, the relationships we've built here and the experience that we've accumulated, that's pure gain. So in a way, there's already victory tonight in the snow, or today in the snow.
Thank you so much for talking to us, Isa. And the bike block will be appearing tomorrow at the Reclaim the Power demonstration, and we'll be broadcasting hopefully from there as well.
Welcome back to Indie Media Radio from the COP15. I'm Anya.
And I'm Chickpea.
Early in the morning of the 16th of December, multiple marchers tried to make their way to the Bella Center, where the COP15 was being held.
The group meeting at Ortstad Station, named the Green Block, was surrounded by police and some were arrested, while others managed to move towards the COP15.
A second block, named the Blue Block, of more than 1,000 people, made their way to the Bella Center whilst resisting attempts from the police to fragment and splinter the group.
The bike block was blocked by police and redirected away from the Bella Center. At the same time, a group of protesters managed to get into the area of the COP15 summit with a raft.
Police repeatedly attacked crowds with baton charges and pepper spray, as well as arresting protesters throughout the morning. The police also targeted and arrested medics.
Corporate media reported 200 to 250 arrests during the day's actions, including further targeted arrests of spokespeople, with reports that they were violently snatched out of crowds.
Meanwhile, at the location of the COP15 in the Bella Center, Friends of the Earth, Avaaz, and Via Campesina were refused entry despite having been allowed into the conference previously and having since acquired the second accreditation that was necessary in order to gain entry into the conference.
Delegates staged a sit-in protest, which went on till the early morning hours, when delegates were dragged away from the premises, whilst 200 others from NGOs, Indigenous people, and the Global South marched out of the Bella Center, but were met by police with batons and pepper spray, who then physically blocked them and beat them, preventing them from reaching the People's Assembly, which was taking place outside.
An hour later, a protester broke into the COP15 plenary with the slogan "Climate Justice Now," and the Indian delegation burned its badges.
Protest against the COP15 process continued into the next day, with speeches and prisoner solidarity demos and multiple solidarity protests happening around the globe.
This next piece of audio is from the People's Assembly, which started at noon on the 16th of December, the Reclaim Power Day of Action.
Because the solution to the problem cannot be within the system that caused the problem.
Por eso, esta propuesta no puede entrar en el mercado de carbono, ni en red, ni en mecanismos, en los mecanismos de desarrollo limpio.
This is why this kind of proposal is not going to enter inside of carbon trades, markets, or clean development mechanisms.
Esta propuesta se está desarrollando en Ecuador, pero se puede aplicar en todos los países que tienen explotación petrolera.
This is a proposal that is being developed in Ecuador, but it can be implemented in all other countries where oil is currently being exploited.
Por eso es el reto. Tenemos que aplicar estas verdaderas soluciones.
That is the challenge, to apply the real solutions.
Y les invito a gritar, leave the oil in the soil. Leave the oil in the soil. Leave the oil in the soil. Leave the oil in the soil.
People on the inside, delegates, and they tried to leave. Were they allowed to leave? What happened?
No, definitely not. This group of people, between 200 and 300 people, were largely from civil society, NGO delegates, but including the Bolivian government delegations, some text negotiators from African countries, and they all came together and they were chanting "Reclaim power" and "We want climate justice." As they moved out of the Bell Center, they marched through it. They tried to leave, and they were stopped forcibly on a bridge, which would have let them join the People's Assembly. And they were actually quite violently stopped, unfortunately, and also threatened with arrest several times. And many of them are absolutely outraged because they wanted to come to the People's Assembly to contribute to this alternative space away from the UN talks, but they weren't allowed to do that. Hugo Chavez was definitely all for what was happening, for the protesters, rather. He said he saluted the protesters, and he said that we need system change, not climate change, which is exactly what we're talking about.
Okay, so there are the people that were inside trying to get out and weren't allowed. There were people meeting in just outside the People's Assembly. So tell us, what was that about? Like, how many people and what came together?
So pretty much all through the morning in Copenhagen, you had groups assembling in order to make the way towards the Bell Center in various ways. And estimates are between 1,500 and 5,000 protesters. It's hard to say because we're so sneaky and dynamic and we move so quickly. But there was a big block of people moving from inside, sort of closer to the city center, towards the Bell Center, called the Blue Block. And we also had a whole bunch of people running around in the Green Block and trying to actually find an alternative way to get to the Bell Center. And we had people on bikes trying to move their way in. And we had people who normally would be allowed inside the Bell Center but have been kicked out as part of the silencing of dissenting voices. And they were also moving with us towards the Bell Center. And that's thousands of us coming towards the fences despite huge police presence and mass arrests, and getting to the gate and trying to get in, and then holding the People's Assembly just outside the gate.
Late into this yesterday evening and early this morning, there was a sit-in. Can you tell us about that? Mm-hmm. Who was involved? And
this was something quite exciting. I had no idea it was going to happen, but as a lot of people have heard, over the past week, the UN has been massively cutting down on the number of non-governmental delegates who are allowed inside the Bell Center. So it has been essentially removing people's privileges of entrance. And so these thousands of people were queuing in outside the Bell Center every day for the past few days, waiting to see if they'd be allowed in. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing the non-governmental voice in the Bell Center go drop from about 24,000 delegates to just 90 on Friday, which is absolutely shocking. And we're still trying to find the figures for corporate delegates, but I'm quite sure that the cut wasn't as drastic as those of non-governmental civil society representatives. So there was a lot of outrage because some of the most critical NGOs, the ones who are most critical of the COP process, are having their delegations massively slashed. And yesterday, several delegations were actually refused all permission to enter the Bell Center, including Avaz, Friends of the Earth. We had delegates from Via Campesina and ACED refuse permission. And what was cited was unauthorized protest. So anything from, you know, holding a sheet of paper with a message on it to standing in a corridor with a banner. So Avaz wasn't allowed in. Friends of the Earth was told that for security reasons they weren't allowed in. So the entire Friends of the Earth delegation was kicked out. And the head of Friends of the Earth International was physically escorted out of the building, which is absolutely unprecedented. It is shocking. And in defiance of this, about 70 to 80 civil society reps sat down at the security check of the Bell Center, and they were sitting there from about the middle of the day until I heard midnight, some reports said, before they were removed. And this is a really interesting development because, you know, NGOs are a bit fluffy, but we're actually seeing them recognize as well that the COP process is failing. And this is part of this new alliance. Everyone's actually realizing that if we want to avoid catastrophic climate change, we need to declare the current system as void, inadequate, and harmful and move towards a better system.
So is it true that six people actually got in as well from the different blocks, one of the blocks? Have you been able to confirm that?
Yes, that has been confirmed. Later in the day, a group of six people said, you know what, we got to get in there. And so they just busted in and had some chance for climate justice before they were taken away and put into cages.
And speaking of cages, do you have any numbers for us? Like, what is CJA saying in terms of arrests and also people if anyone went to hospital or things like that?
I don't know too many of the figures about injuries. Obviously, the police were completely disproportionate and brutal. There were several hospitalizations, and we even saw action medics being arrested simply for calling ambulances when someone was mauled by police dogs. In terms of arrests, we're estimating around 2,000 over the course of the week, which is quite a figure, and in some ways just goes to show that again we're seeing a huge silencing of dissent. People are being repressed and not allowed to speak their voice in any channel, either on the streets or within the UN summit. We're seeing very few charges, but unfortunately there are a handful of activists who are being labeled as organizers by the Danish police, which is obviously farcical because we're a horizontal organization and they're simply spokespeople, and they're still in prison, many of them, and we really need to show our solidarity with them.
How do you think the Reclaim Power Day of Action went then?
I'm actually very pleased with it. In many ways, it's a bit of a shame that we weren't able to meet with the delegates inside. But the very fact that they were prevented from coming out and we were prevented from coming in just goes to show that the system is corrupt, it's broken, and it's silencing the voices of those people who need to have their voices the most heard. And it also shows that enough people are willing to take radical action or to affect the social change that we need to avoid climate change.
So, not long ago, the UK government announced its fantastic new solution to climate change. It's all sorted out, and so this is a poem all about that. It's called A Modest Proposal. Let's add arsenic to lager to tackle binge drinking. Freeze over the rivers to stop boats from sinking. Attach fireworks to golf balls to increase their range. And use nuclear power to fight climate change. It's a sweet deal. Just £6,000,000,000 for the silky smooth sensation of putting up and taking down a nuclear power station. Yes, just £6,000,000,000. What else would we have spent it on? Insulating every single home in London from the cold? A life-size elephant made of solid gold? Providing clean drinking water for a quarter of the planet? Paying for everyone in Pakistan to change their name to Janet? 400 holidays in space or 60 lunar trips? Every hospital in Britain fully bedded and equipped? Buy every Premier League player and give them all to Grimsby Town? Subsidise the trains to bring the ticket prices down? Make all our universities free for a year? Buy every British adult about 60 pints of beer? Now, it's all very easy to say, hey, if all this money was instead spent making all our homes and work zones more energy efficient, and if all the political time and stress spent pushing new nukes was instead used helping us all to consume less, we'd save far more carbon, and indeed be able to meet all our needs from wind, water, tide and sun, and probably all have a lot more fun, while avoiding climate disaster a good deal faster than the struggle and trouble of trying to force new nuclear stations on a nation that still remembers Chernobyl. But all this nuclear dissing is clearly missing the point. Because nukes mean shareholder profit. Nukes mean centralized power. Nukes mean ignoring the difficult choices and putting our faith in the corporate voices who are loath to give up the impossible chase of infinite growth on the limited space of this one planet Earth. And don't forget that with every nuclear plant you get free all the thrills of being killed by a thing you can't see. You get risks and surprises, cancers and mutations, toxic waste on the loose, and the perfect excuse for every nation to build their own stations, build nuclear weapons, and build the suspense. When will someone get tense and trigger world annihilation in the name of self-defense? Let's sing nuclear's praises. Let's keep clinging on long after hope, morals and logic have gone. Because admitting that energy growth can't go on and we'll just have to do more with less from now on means our future of jetpacks has suffered a setback. And most economics is wrong. So, let's breed slugs in the garden to eat all the weeds. Let's improve failing test scores by giving kids speed. Use nitric acid to stop nasty rashes from forming. And use nuclear power to fight global warming. Thank you.
Welcome back to Indie Media COP15 Radio. This is Anya.
And I'm Chickpea.
And you were just listening to spoken word poet Danny Chivers. For more detailed information on the COP15 Week of Action, as well as links to the archived COP15 radio show, check out the Danish Indie Media website, www.indiemedia.dk, which features a wealth of information and articles in English, as well as pictures, videos, and more. Many thanks to Terminal 21, Radio Korax, the Indie Media Collective, and everybody who came together to make Indie Media Radio at the COP15 happen.
Also check out Dissident Island Radio at www.dissidentisland.org, which is your local London DIY radio crew. We'll leave you with one last audio piece, a bit of music from a band local to Copenhagen called Sort Stew, who were scheduled to play the Reclaim Power Benefit After Party on the 14th December that was shut down by the police. All their music is copyleft and available to download at their website, www.sortstew, that's spelled sortstew.org.
And thank you very much for tuning in.
Janteloven Andreas Naksang og kan 2006 representerer Fatamann flyter på Sørlandslang innvandrende faen uten rang tar rett eller annet og bygger en sang tar deg med på lang reisen til utopialand fra Kristiania til besett by militant finfant, tar den elegant blant borger, krig og forkultur som i sort front på grønn bakgrund sitter og mediterer i den kokende avgrund.
Og så det her jeg eleverer til den her kun en smule irriteret en gammel skoleelev med midterste finger i vejret for sort slug. Ikke et stort crew, men et sted hvor tingene ikke bliver diskuteret, de bliver gjort nu. Alt den rap må have forvandet min mave sex bund til alger. Efterhånden også for længe jeg har spyttet mund fækalier, dog heller ikke uden repressalier. Det langt til siden har på guld og knækker og i baljer. Gud min til slet spiller mænd der skider oprejst. Et blodigt grin, nat grin. Den sorte flag tophejst. Siden jeg fik mit første vers afrundet. Siden jeg på ord fik Lennart Faust pervers bagbundet. Siden jeg rakte den til Fandango. Nu rækker jeg den til Andreas. For det der er mit er hans, vores er deres og jeres.
For ligesom romerne ikke kunne holde natterne fra kælderne er der nu overvågning over alle de gaderne. Og jeg kalder det verdensstadig krig, hvor hagekors er stattes af en halv nøgen pige. For ligesom romerne ikke kunne holde natterne fra gaderne er der nu overvågning over alle de gaderne. Og jeg kalder det verdensstadig krig, hvor hagekors er stattes af en halv nøgen pige og et dollargrin.
Tilhører det rak og pak, som kan slik snakke akrobatik. Vort flagg er grønt med front skrevet i sort som eneste lyrik. For det blir høytrykk når sort stue velter scenen. Slenger opp knutt neven og legger inn dren for realiteten, yo. Bomber tapeten med fargere symboler. Så stå gå, sitt ligg nytt dere her. For jeg lyst dere må absolutt ingenting som helst. Få på, stå på og lytt godt i hjertet ditt. Kjære
kærlighetsrebell på heltid. Slumstormer, fredelig, sikre, ler i skjeggen når de andre har det kjedelig, for jeg beveger de. En omgang, fleksible atomer, og med 21 gram lever de.
Tilsat 21-20 og en lommetyv svæver de, tæver de ord, jeg kæder sammen i mit skriveri. Udlægte, udtalte tankestrøm, påtvinger jeg jer mine orange-grønne trancedrømme. Paranoia og konspirationsteorier, grunden til jeg konsekvent er imod det du siger. Ser du lige siden første verdenskrig blev arrangeret, er pengemænd for at få sarens fald garanteret. Har disse verdensherskere været skyld i så mange dødsfald, at det kan sammenlignes med det årlige globale kødsal? Det kan man kalde død til, og døren smækkes bræt i, hvis man prøver at finde ud af mere om Illuminati. For de gemmer sig bag internationale institutioner og instanser, og skanser sig bag NASA's nyeste panser, og antager, at du er interesseret i deres verden. Og hvis du fra Vesten, kan du både æde og beholde tærten, holde verden, og gå i seng med ren samvittighed, bevidstheden om verdens sande tilstand, holde splittet ned. Jo, stop mig, når det bliver for indforstået. Følg endelig Bibelens råd, for din kind forslået. Men en ting skal jeg sige nu, og mærk dig mine ord. Det kommer til at ske sikkert før, end du tror. Den dag, hvor du ikke bare kan slukke for dit tv. Den dag, hvor det er uden for dit vindue, du kan se det. Hvor vi vil høre den tredje verdensfrede smerteskrig. Overalt gør de sig parat til tredje verdenskrig.
For ligesom romerne ikke kunne holde nallerne fra kælderne, er der nu overvågning over alle kælderne. Og jeg kalder det verdensfrede krig, hvor hagekost og status er en halv nøgen bi. Ligesom romerne ikke kunne holde nallerne fra kælderne, er der nu overvågning over alle kælderne. Og jeg kalder det verdensfrede krig, hvor hagekost status er en halv nøgen bi og et dollargrin.